3 past midnight. The Library Policeman. From the book 4 past midnight by Stephen King. Read by Ken Howard. Everything, Sam Peebles decided later, was the fault of the goddamned acrobat. If the acrobat hadn't gotten drunk at exactly the wrong time, Sam never would have ended up in such trouble. It is not bad enough, he thought with a perhaps justifiable bitterness, that life is like a narrow beam over an endless chasm, a beam we have to walk blindfolded. It's bad, but not bad enough. Sometimes, we also get pushed. But that was later. First, even before the library policeman, was the drunken acrobat. In Junction City, the last Friday of every month was speakers' night at the local Rotarians' Hall. On the last Friday in March of 1990, the Rotarians were scheduled to hear, and to be entertained by, the Amazing Joe, an acrobat with Curry and Trembo's All-Star Circus and Traveling Carnival. The telephone on Sam Peebles' desk at Junction City Realty and Insurance rang at 4:05 on Thursday afternoon. Sam picked it up. It was always Sam who picked it up. Either Sam in person, or Sam on the answering machine, because he was Junction City Realty and Insurance's owner and sole employee. He was not a rich man, but he was a reasonably happy one. He liked to tell people that his first Mercedes was still quite a distance in the future, but he had a Ford, which was almost new, and owned his own home on Kelton Avenue. Also, the business keeps me in beer and Skittles, he liked to add, although in truth he hadn't drunk much beer since college, and wasn't exactly sure what Skittles were. He thought they might be pretzels. Junction City Realty and...
Sam, this is Craig. The acrobat broke his neck.
What?
You heard me,
Craig Jones cried in deeply aggrieved tones.
The acrobat broke his fucking neck.
Oh, Sam said. Gee. He thought about this for a moment and then asked cautiously... Is he dead, Craig?
No, he's not dead, but he might as well be as far as we're concerned. He's in the hospital over in Cedar Rapids with his neck dipped in about 20 pounds of plaster. Billy Bright just called me. He said the guy came on drunk as a skunk at the matinee this afternoon, tried to do a back-over flip, and landed outside the center ring on the nape of his neck. Billy said he could hear it way up in the bleachers, where he was sitting. He said it sounded like when you step in a puddle that just iced over.
Ouch. Sam exclaimed, wincing.
I'm not surprised. After all, the Amazing Joe? What kind of name is that for a circus performer? I mean, the Amazing Randix, okay. The Amazing Tortellini, still not bad. But the Amazing Joe? It sounds like a prime example of brain damage in action to me.
Jesus, that's too bad.
Fucking shit on toast is what it is. It leaves us without a speaker tomorrow night, good buddy.
Sam began to wish he had left the office promptly at 4. Craig would have been stuck with Sam the answering machine, and that would have given Sam the living being a little more time to think. He felt he would soon need time to think. He also felt that Craig Jones was not going to give him any.
Yes, he said. I guess that's true enough.
He hoped he sounded philosophical but helpless.
What a shame.
It sure is, Craig said, and then dropped the dime.
But I know you'll be happy to step in and fill the slot.
Me? Craig, you've got to be kidding. I can't even do a somersault, let alone a back-over flip.
I thought you could talk about the importance of the independently owned business in small-town life,
Craig Jones pressed on relentlessly.
If that doesn't do it for you, there's baseball. Lacking that, you could always drop your pants and wag your wing-wang at the audience. Sam, I am not just the head of the speakers committee. That would be bad enough. But since Kenny moved away and Carl quit coming, I am the speakers committee. Now you gotta help me. I need a speaker tomorrow night. There are about five guys in the whole damn club I feel I can trust in a pinch, and you're one of them. But you're also the only one who hasn't filled in already in a situation like this, so you're elected, buddy boy. Frank Stevens, pinch hit for the guy from the trucking union last year when the grand jury indicted him for fraud and he couldn't show up. Sam, it's your turn in the barrel. You can't let me down, man. You owe me.
I run an insurance business, Sam cried. When I'm not writing insurance, I sell farms, mostly to banks. Most people find it boring. The ones who don't find it boring find it disgusting.
None of that matters.
Craig was now moving in for the kill, marching over Sam's puny objection in grim hobnailed boots.
They'll all be drunk by the end of dinner, and you know it. They won't remember a goddamn word you said come Saturday morning, but in the meantime, I need someone to stand up and talk for half an hour, and you're elected.
Sam continued to object a little longer, but Craig kept coming down on the imperatives, italicizing them mercilessly.
Need. Gotta. Oh.
All right, he said at last. All right, enough.
My man, Craig exclaimed. His voice was suddenly full of sunshine and rainbows. Remember, it doesn't have to be any longer than 30 minutes, plus maybe another 10 for questions, if anybody has any questions. And you really can wag your wing-wang if you want to. I doubt that anybody could actually see it, but...
Craig, Sam said, that's enough.
Oh, sorry. Shut my mouth.
Craig, perhaps lightheaded with relief, cackled.
Listen, why don't we terminate this discussion?
Sam reached for the roll of Tums he kept in his desk drawer. He suddenly felt he might need quite a few Tums during the next 28 hours or so.
It looks as if I've got a speech to write. You got it, Craig said. Just remember, dinner at 6, speech at 7:30, and as they used to say in Hawaii 5-0, be there, aloha.
Aloha, Craig, Sam said and hung up. He stared at the phone. He felt hot gas rising slowly up through his chest and into his throat. He opened his mouth and uttered a sour burp, the product of a stomach which had been reasonably serene until 5 minutes ago. He ate the first of what would prove to be a great many Tums indeed. Instead of going bowling that night as he had planned, Sam Peebles shut himself in his study at home with a yellow legal pad, 3 sharpened pencils, a package of Kent cigarettes, and a 6-pack of Jolt. He unplugged the telephone from the wall, lit a cigarette, and stared at the yellow pad. After 5 minutes of staring, he wrote this on the top line of the top sheet. Small town businesses, the lifeblood of America. He said it out loud and liked the sound of it. Well, maybe he didn't exactly like it, but he could live with it. He said it louder and liked it better. A little better. It actually wasn't that good. In fact, it probably sucked the big hairy one, but it beat the shit out of communism, threat, or menace. And Craig was right. Most of them would be too hungover on Saturday morning to remember what they'd heard on Friday night anyway. Marginally encouraged, Sam began to write. When I moved to Junction City from the more or less thriving metropolis of Ames in 1984. And this is why I feel now, as I did on that bright September morn in 1984, that small businesses are not just the lifeblood of America, but the bright and sparkly lifeblood of the entire Western world. Sam stopped, crushed out a cigarette in the ashtray on his office desk, and looked hopefully at Naomi Higgins. Well, what do you think?
Naomi was a pretty young woman from Proverbia, a town 4 miles west of Junction City. She lived in a ramshackle house by the Proverbia River with her ramshackle mother. Most of the Rotarians knew Naomi, and wagers had been offered from time to time on whether the house or the mother would fall apart first. Sam didn't know if any of these wagers had ever been taken, but if so, their resolution was still pending. Naomi had graduated from Iowa City Business College and could actually retrieve whole legible sentences from her shorthand. Since she was the only local woman who possessed such a skill, she was in great demand among Junction City's limited business population. She also had extremely good legs, and that didn't hurt. She worked mornings 5 days a week for 4 men and 1 woman, 2 lawyers, 1 banker, and 2 realtors. In the afternoons, she went back to the ramshackle house, and when she was not caring for her ramshackle mother, she typed up the dictation she had taken. Sam Peebles engaged Naomi's services each Friday morning from 10 until noon. But this morning he had put aside his correspondence, even though some of it badly needed to be answered, and asked Naomi if she would listen to something.
"Sure, I guess so," Naomi had replied.
She looked a little worried, as if she thought Sam, who she had briefly dated, might be planning to propose marriage. When he explained that Craig Jones had drafted him to stand in for the wounded acrobat, and that he wanted her to listen to his speech, she'd relaxed and listened to the whole thing, all 26 minutes of it, with flattering attention. "Don't be afraid to be honest," he added, before Naomi could do more than open her mouth.
"It's good," she said.
"Pretty interesting."
"No, that's okay. You don't have to spare my feelings. Let it all hang out."
"I am. It's really okay. Besides, by the time you start talking, they'll all be..."
"Yes, they'll all be hammered, I know."
This prospect had comforted Sam at first, but now it disappointed him a little. Listening to himself read, he'd actually thought the speech was pretty good.
"There is one thing," Naomi said thoughtfully.
"Oh?"
"It's kind of, you know, dry."
"Oh," Sam said. He sighed and rubbed his eyes. He had been up until nearly 1 o'clock this morning, first writing and then revising.
"But that's easy to fix," she assured him. "Just go to the library and get a couple of those books."
Sam felt a sudden sharp pain in his lower belly and grabbed his roll of Tums. Research for a stupid Rotary Club speech? Library research? That was going a little overboard, wasn't it? He had never been to the Junction City Library before, and he didn't see a reason to go there now. Still, Naomi had listened very closely. Naomi was trying to help, and it would be rude not to at least listen to what she had to say.
"What books?"
"You know, books with stuff in them to liven up speeches. They're like..." Naomi groped.
"Well, you know, the hot sauce they give you at China Light, if you want it."
"Yes."
"They're like that. They have jokes. Also, there's this one book, Best Love Poems of the American People. You could probably find something in there for the end. Something sort of uplifting."
"There are poems in this book about the importance of small businesses in American life?" Sam asked doubtfully.
"When you quote poetry, people get uplifted," Naomi said. "Nobody cares what it's about, Sam, let alone what it's for."
"And they really have joke books especially for speeches?" Sam found this almost impossible to believe, although hearing that the library carried books on such esoterica as small engine repair and wig styling wouldn't have surprised him in the least.
"Yes."
"How do you know?"
"When Phil Brakeman was running for the State House, I used to type up speeches for him all the time," Naomi said. "He had one of those books. I just can't remember what the name of it was. All I can think of is Jokes for the John. And of course, that's not right."
"No," Sam agreed, thinking that a few choice tidbits from Jokes for the John would probably make him a howling success. But he began to see what Naomi was getting at, and the idea appealed to him despite his reluctance to visit the local library after all his years of cheerful neglect. A little spice for the old speech. Dress up your leftovers. Turn your meatloaf into a masterpiece. And a library, after all, was just a library. If you didn't know how to find what you wanted, all you had to do was ask a librarian. Answering questions was one of their jobs, right?
"Anyway, you could leave it just the way it is," Naomi said. "I mean, they will be drunk."
She looked at Sam kindly but severely, and then checked her watch. "You have over an hour left. Did you want to do some letters?"
"No, I guess not. Why don't you type up my speech instead?"
He had already decided to spend his lunch hour at the library.